Hello there, and welcome to Gilded in Blood, the Horror Lit Podcast. My name is Kevin, and you are joining me on a wonderfully fall-like morning. It is brisk, it is cold, and I just love doing this in the morning, to start the day off talking about some wonderful horror literature. Hopefully this is something that you enjoy as well. I don't know when you listen, but whenever you listen, welcome. And thanks for joining me. We have another short shock for you today. Today's story is The Tower by Marganita Lasky. And I took this story from the Norton Book of Ghost Stories. And a little personal story before we get started here, talking about this wonderful tale. I actually was lucky enough to take a college course called Imaging Ghosts. And this was one of my textbooks, the Norton Book of Ghost Stories. And we read quite a few of these stories and talked about them. And I think we covered maybe half of them, not even half of them, maybe like a quarter of them in the class. But I burned through that book. It's got so many wonderful, wonderful stories. As far as I know, it is still in print. You can easily find copies. I think there's a copy of it on the shelf at my local used bookstore. So this one's very, very easy to get. It has a wonderful collection of short stories. There is a story by fan favorite Shirley Jackson in there. I think it's The Tooth, which is a wonderful, weird, excellently creepy short story that is also in her The Lottery and others. So if you don't have that one, you might grab this one and get some a little bit more of a wide variety. But this story in particular really struck me. This story creeped me out so well. I loved it so much. So I want to talk about it with you today. But as an end to that little side note, ladies and gentlemen, that is the reason to go to college. You can go to college and take some really interesting classes, especially in the English program, where you might get to spend an entire semester talking about ghost stories. How wonderful is that? It was really, really wonderful. So keep that in mind. Even if your community college has classes like that, I highly recommend you go take them because you're going to get introduced to some stuff that you might not get introduced to otherwise. And that's part of my job here too. I want to inform you guys about things that you might not have run across yet. So hopefully I'm doing that service for you, but let's do it today for The Tower by Marganita Lasky. Now, this story starts with Caroline, who is on holiday in Italy, taking a day out on her own to do some sightseeing, and she happens upon a structure called the Tower of Sacrifice and decides to explore it, stupidly. So there's a lot of backstory that gets shoved into the very front of this tale. We find that the tower has this dark history. It was constructed by this reputed black magician. And it also, the guidebook also tells her that the surrounding village was destroyed utterly. So it makes it a point to say that, you know, in Italy, where every available piece of land is cultivated for some reason or another, there's this really desolate, wide expanse surrounding the tower, which gives it this very ominous feel. And furthermore, there's the subtle backstory here on the character as well, that Caroline is really here to try to get away from her husband, Neville, who is a diplomat in Italy, and her desire to have something with which to battle his condescending, controlling nature, this experience that he doesn't have a right to boast of. And that really leads her to explore this tower. There's this sense that whenever they go to like a museum or other places where he thinks that he can get her cultured, and I'm using those air quotes here, I know you can't see me, but there's this sense that he really looks down on her and that, oh yeah, I need to elevate your experience. What a son of a bitch. He really is. But Caroline is really looking for a way to counteract that. And that's what really leads her to do this. And the reason I kind of talk about that is, as in horror movies, horror stories and horror books also have those moments where the reader or the viewer or whatever looks at what the character is about to do and ever so politely says, "What the fuck is wrong with you? Stop doing that. Don't do that. Why would you do that?" Well, there's a sense here that she has a legitimate reason for doing what she does in this story, even though the entire story, you are yelling at the pages, "Carolyn, what is wrong with you? You've got to realize this is not going to end well." Well, there's the sense that all she really wants is to stand on her own and do something on her own and not feel like she's being condescended to or controlled by this asshole that she's married to. So that's really our reason for what she does here, even though as we get on, yeah, I think you'll agree with me that this is not something she should be engaging in. So when she gets to the tower, she notes that she has about an hour's worth of daylight left. And she figures, I'm going to go up to the tower, I'm going to see what's going on, and in a half an hour I'll be back in town, and I'll have this experience with which to tell Neville. But there's this internal monologue that goes throughout her head as she's walking up to this tower. And it, in fact, is the same reader's voice. It is saying, "You really should just go ahead and get back into your car and drive home. There's no reason to be checking out this tower, especially alone. Nobody knows you're here. There's nobody around. And especially at night. What is wrong with you?" But she kind of squashes that and moves into the tower to see what is going on. Now she gets into the tower, and there are these wonderfully ominous setting notes here, such as, you know, the setting sun, the history of the tower, the fact that the land around the tower is barren. All these things really coalesce to make this a really wonderfully creepy atmosphere as she's walking up to the tower. And the plainness of the tower, so there's no frills to it. There's no lavish spires or anything like that. It's this red brick column that's just rising up into the air. There's nothing really much to it. And that belies its wickedness, because once she gets into the tower, she realizes that there's things that are subtly wrong with the tower. When she gets in, there's just this plain room with an arched ceiling and a staircase that starts to kind of spiral up and through the ceiling and on up into the tower. And she says, "Oh, the view at the top must be nice." And she starts to walk up this tower. But the handrail starts to crumble as she goes higher, and the windows are set too high in the wall to see out of as she climbs. So there's something going on here. There's a weirdness to this tower. And as she comes through the ceiling of the entrance room, the anteroom, she sees that basically the stairs just spiral all the way up through into the tower, where the top is actually open, and she sees the ring of the sky, and it's steadily getting darker as the sun's going down. So she says, "Well, I'm just going to climb to the top, see what's up there, and just have a look, and then come down and go tell Neville." Okay? So it's also noted in the guidebook that the tower has 470 stairs. So as she's climbing, she starts counting these stairs. 1, 2, 3, 4. On and on and on. And that will become important a little bit later. And as she climbs, each safety measure is eventually taken away. There are gaps in the handrail where all of a sudden, when she's maybe halfway up, she moves her hand forward and all of a sudden there's no rail. There's just this open drop. And it's really shocking when you read it, especially, you know, anyone who has a fear of heights is going to have a hard time with this story. The sky is losing the light of day. There's all these things that kind of keep her feeling safe are slowly being taken away from her as she climbs up this tower. And once she gets to the top of the tower, there's just nothing. There's just this little piece of railing that's barring her way, and that's it. And she's like, "Are you serious? This is it? What's going on?" But she feels under her hand this small wooden door, and she says, "Oh, okay, well, there must be like a lookout over there." And she opens the door, and it leads out onto a platform that runs around the tower, and it says that it's a yard wide. So, of course, that's 3 feet, and it slopes down away from the tower, and it's made of the shiny, slick stones. It is literally, it seems like a platform designed to make people jump from it. Now, I've always loved this aspect of, the fear of heights. It's not, I don't love it. I find it fascinating. I myself do not like heights. I don't like being very far up. I do remember visiting the St. Louis Arch, and there's the ability to take a little lift up to the top of the arch. And when you're up there, there's an observation window, and it actually points down, because, think of the construction of the arch as kind of a triangle, and at the top, the point of the triangle, one of the points of the triangle leads, points straight down. So you can actually look through this observation window down at the ground. And aside from the fact that when you're up that high, you actually feel the structure move with the wind, which, oh my God, you see how far down it is. And the first thought that went through my head was, I would have time to take a breath and keep screaming before I actually hit the ground if I fell from this high. I do not like this at all. So what I find fascinating is how perception changes when you're in a perilous situation way up high in the air. I want you to take a yardstick. I want you to lay it down on the ground, and I want you to stand on it. It's not a problem. You can stand on this. You can do a little dance on a yardstick and have no problem falling off. That's no big deal. Now put that thing hundreds of feet in the sky and then make it slope away, slope down, and make it of shiny, slick stones that's easy to slip on. It's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying in this story when Caroline comes out onto this platform and she has this awful sense of vertigo that she's like, oh my God, I'm so far up here. And at that point, Caroline's inner voice, which has been trying to save her by making her not climb the tower, it betrays her utterly. It tells her that there is no other way down than to jump. And this is another thing I find very fascinating. And for this discussion, I actually looked it up. I'd seen, I think, like a YouTube video where they actually talk about this phenomenon, but I couldn't find it again. So I just looked up a quick article on it online. There is a thing called high place phenomenon, which, if there's anything that we know about scientists, they really suck at coming up with names for things, high place phenomena. But this is an actual thing. It is a state where the brain signals get misinterpreted, causing an urge to lean toward a fall rather than away. Anybody who has ever been kind of at the precipice of like a canyon or a cliff or an edge of a building, things of this nature, or even like at a window way up high in a building, they have felt this weird urge to look over into the abyss terrifies them, but they actually feel themselves leaning forward toward it. And there's I didn't quite understand all of the scientific stuff. Not a science guy here. I'm a lit guy. I understand literature. I don't understand science. But it's something with the amygdala and the parts of the brain that are sending signals of like a danger signal, but they're sending them so quickly that other parts of the brain misinterpret them and almost make them want to stop the anxiety response by resolving the situation. The resolving the situation the quickest way is just to get down. So it's a really weird phenomenon. I encourage you to go read up on it. You'll probably understand it better than I do. But whether I understand it scientifically or not, the fact remains the same. I, like most other people, have felt this. I've stood at the edge of kind of a drop and felt this weird pull, this weird urge to fall forward or to step out into this nothingness. And this is what starts to afflict Caroline. She says to herself, I can't get down. The only way I can get down is to jump. And of course, that is terrifying to her. She closes her eyes. She tries to let the vertigo feeling pass. And she actually is able to open the door and re-enter the tower and starts to try to calm down. But at that point, she is now back in the tower. And this sense of depth really, really gets to her. And this one, I also have a small little personal story here. This is going to continue happening with these episodes, so I hope they don't annoy you. But I remember going with my family to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And this was my first viewing of the ocean. I remember we're driving along, we come up over it, and my God, there's blue just as far as the eye can see. It was absolutely breathtaking. And I remember one of these days, Dad and I were walking out on the beach, and we saw this kind of commotion down further on the beach. And we went over there and asked what was going on, and there was like a rescue team going out, and they were pretty far out onto the water. And what had happened was this guy was laying on an inner tube. He had fallen asleep, foolishly, and without anybody to kind of keep an eye on him, he had drifted out. The tide had taken him out, and he was, oh God, it was something, it wasn't quite a mile, but it was damn close away from the shore. And he woke up and he promptly started to lose his mind with fear. And people had to come out and get him and everything like that. And I remember at the time, you know, being stupid and young, thinking to myself, come on, it's under a mile. Get off your inner tube and swim. And then I thought to myself, at that point, when you're that far out, think of how much empty, or maybe not empty, water is underneath you. You look down and it's just black depth, and there could be so many things under you, maybe rising up toward you at this point. I understood. I really did. I understood that sense of depth below you is absolutely terrifying. It really, really is. It's not quite the same here with Caroline in this tower, but the idea of how easy it would be to fall from this height. There's nothing keeping her from falling at this height either. At this point, the railway is completely crumbled away and gone. It's just these steps and this empty drop to her side, and she has to come down these stairs. And she keeps thinking to herself, you can't. There's absolutely no way you can get down these stairs. The only way to get down is to fall. And of course, she's crying. She's absolutely terrified. She's in this situation. And she starts to go down the stairs one at a time, as slowly and as safely as she can. But she has to keep coming down these stairs. And of course, she keeps counting. She keeps counting these stairs as she's going down. All she needs to do is to make it to 470 and she'll be down. And at one point, something brushes her face. And she says she knows that it had to be a bat. It couldn't have been a hand, but whatever it was, she rushes down the steps, obsessively counting. And when the story ends, she's counting 501, 502, and 3, and 4. And that's how the story ends, counting more steps than there should be and not reaching the bottom. And I'm sitting here. I'm sitting here on a Sunday morning, looking at the sun, and I've got chills. I've got freaking goosebumps all over me because it's such a creepy end to this story. And I adore the fact that she is now in this situation that defies reality. This story blew me away. It is one of the classic stories of horror literature. And though it's in a ghost story book, it again, just like the short story we talked about 2 weeks ago, it's a short story that does something a little bit different. It's not quite your standard ghost story. And for that, I absolutely adore it. It's just something that does what it does very well, but a little bit skewed. It's a little bit different than anything you've ever thought about before. So I find it a wonderful short story. This one, unlike the one we talked about a fortnight ago, this one's very, very available. You can find it anywhere. I myself, of course, I have it in the Norton Book of Ghost Stories, but I myself, when I was writing my notes for this episode, I listened to it on YouTube. It's like 17 minutes long. It's read very, very well. And if you're a person who doesn't really like audiobooks or listening to stories, there's actually an option. You click the little gear settings thing, and you can actually speed it up. So it goes a little bit faster, and it reads a little bit more naturally. You can find this story everywhere. So I really highly encourage you, even knowing what's going to happen, this is a story that will benefit from you sitting down and reading it or listening to it. Actually, listening to it might be even better. You know, turn down the lights, lay on your couch or sit in your chair, turn on YouTube and kind of close your eyes and let this story be narrated to you. It's a really cool way to go through this story. I highly recommend you check it out, The Tower by Margarita Lasky. Guys, that's it for today's Short Shock. Next week, we have another full episode coming up. Now, those of you who have done your homework and listened to previous episodes, specifically the Beowulf episode, here's where you get rewarded for going through that older book, because our next book that we're going to cover is John Gardner's Grendel, which is the story of Beowulf from the monster's point of view. It's so much fun. It's such a good, good book. So I highly recommend go check that book out. Read it before we talk about it on the podcast next week. As always, thanks to Swarm for the use of his music. You can find this podcast at gildenandblood.buzzsprout.com or wherever you find your podcasts. And until next time, stay safe and stay spooked.